ABFI 1450, North Idaho's radio.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
All right. Well, happy Friday, everyone. It is a smoky one out there in Sandpoint, Idaho. And I'm very excited that we're here today. I have a return guest with me, Samantha Harvey, who has definitely been an inspiration to me and many out there in a whole new type of conversation we have with horses. So one of the things we do with Let Your Color Out Radio is talking to people who have kind of bucked the system or introduced a new idea, a concept to try to usher in sort of a new way of working together. And Samantha Harvey has done an amazing job with her alternative horsemanship. So welcome, Sam, and
Thank you.
You can tell us a tiny bit about your background.
So I originally started with horses in a traditional manner in the world of three-day eventing, dressage, show jumping. And as I began to ride and compete and travel all over the United States, I realized if I wanted to achieve a certain level, I'd have to go abroad. And so after being on the road in the U.S. for probably about 10 years under a multitude of trainers and getting a variety in my education and what I was exposed to and learning this is what you have to do in order to make it, I went to Europe to go and ride. And I was riding under a couple Olympians when I was over there. So it was the best of the best in the world. And where I was at was the best competitions, the best horses. And, this was the dream. This was what everything, we were working towards. And as I was there, I started realizing that there was an immense amount of physical breakdown in these horses, meaning that there would be injuries that would be life-changing injuries, career-ending injuries. And there always just seemed to be more horses. And so I started realizing as these horses
had this.
Well, no, more horses to replace the ones who were hurt,
who were injured. Okay, right.
And so there was this philosophy that and this acceptance that the horses, in order to compete at this level, there's a certain risk, which is valid. But I started watching the behaviors in the horse and how the interactions were with the people. And a lot of times, as you're bringing along an internationally competitive horse, you start with them quite young. And so you're seasoning them in order to expose them to different types of competition and, being trained in a variety of disciplines. And you're watching their development along with the reality of timing of international competitions, because horses have to qualify at certain times in order to make it to the next competition on the world stage. And I started realizing that many horses were getting hurt. And so I started asking questions and I started looking at the continuous stress mentally that these horses were going through. I started watching the emotional responses, and then I started correlating the physical breakdowns that were happening, realizing there was a connection in there. So it made me stop and step back and start to think about things and start to question the system and the way we've always done it or what it takes in order to make it.
Well, I think, my background, I've had 2 summers now working with Sam and working with the horse, and I think I learned as much about myself as I do about working with the horse. So oftentimes there's this, kind of cowboy up mentality, or in the dressage world, I don't know what you'd call it, but it's definitely a...
Gut it out.
Okay, yeah. There it is. I figured it's something,
yeah.
And you just get in and you kind of power through it, or you push the horse through it. And what I love about her... her way of, she calls it conversations, just different conversation with the horse, is you take the emotion out of it and you really just learn to support the horse where they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that approach is not even in the scheme of things in consideration for many people, whether they're highly competitive or whether they're pleasure riders.
Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't for me as a pleasure rider. I was like, nope, the horse is we're going to get on and we're going to ride over there.
And the big part of this is really our starting place. Like, where are we starting from? And for most people, the idea of any sort of interaction with the horse is about an ego-based approach, even if that's not what they're thinking in their minds, but that's what they've been taught. That's what they've been exposed to, in the sense of make the horse comply, make the horse listen, make the horse jump the fence, make the horse turn back the cow, make the horse, you know, it's all about making. And so when you're coming from this place where your foundation is based on making, you're basically forcing, driving with energy, containing, making a continuous amount of pressure in everything that you do and how you communicate with the horse until he basically gives up any sort of fight or resistance and he complies. And then we used to call it the broke horse.
Right. And in Sam's language, I think you call that containment.
Yes.
Yeah, which I love. It's just the horse just kind of shuts down or emotionally goes away.
Or you have the horse who doesn't comply. And then what is he called? The crazy horse.
That would be my horse.
We get rid of him and we get a new horse because there's always more horses out there.
Okay. Right.
So,
well, this is a great opportunity for anyone out there who is like me, you know, kind of not a midlife crisis, just 50 kids are out of the nest. I'm ready to get back into my childhood dream of, you know, spending time with horses and having them in my world. But, it's been really incredible, and we'll get into that after we take a quick break. But how to slow down and actually be really present with the horse. And, you know, one of the things I do teach is mindfulness with people and taking the time to slow down and actually be with that person or be with that child or be in that relationship at that moment. And I think this is just another way of expanding that practice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because the horse often mirrors where we are mentally, emotionally, and physically. So a lot of times the chaos that we see in our horses is a reflection of the chaos we're bringing unintentionally to when we show up to get away from it all and spending time with the horse.
Isn't that the irony?
That could be the whole topic for the whole show.
We might just do that. So what would you just in a, I always like to ask in the first little bit, and then we'll take a quick break. But what was your why?
My why was watching these horses who gave their all and were not appreciated, were not valued other than being a commodity, a means to an end, and that when push came to shove, money was more important than the well-being of the horse. And to me, in choosing this is my career, this is my future, this is my lifestyle, it was not something that I was going to be able to sleep at night with. And I didn't like the ways in which the behind the scenes reality versus what was taught to the public, what was shown in the magazine covers, what was written in the articles, you know, was presented that this is how we care about the horse, this is how we take care of them. And then when you go behind the scenes and to see the reality, and I knew I had to make a choice that would be good for my own well-being so that I could be the best version of me in order to help these horses in the future.
And to stay within your own integrity.
Yes,
I think, you know,
absolutely.
That's one of my missions. You know, there's a level of integrity that we need to uphold.
Yep. Absolutely.
Period.
Yeah, period.
On that note, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to have some real fun just listening to her new language. I'm still learning it. That's why she's here. I get to enjoy it again in person. So thank you for listening to Let Your Color Out Radio. And we will be right back.
Coeur d'Alene Casino presents the Core Stars Entertainment Series. Be there for Lori Morgan and Pam Tillis' Brits and Glamour Tour on August 19th. See Super Diamond, the Neil Diamond tribute band, on September 2nd. Don't miss TLC on October 28th. And experience King of the Cage Mixed Martial Arts on November 18th. For tickets, visit cdacasino.com. Coeur d'Alene Casino, welcome home.
The Challenge of Champions Bull Riding Competition is back at the Bonner County Fairgrounds Outdoor Arena Friday, August 20th. This fun, family-friendly event features over 30 of the top bull riders and barrel racers. The competition begins at 7:30, and tickets are available now at Les Schwab, Columbia Bank, Sandpoint Superdrug, Carter Country, North 40, and at the box office or online at BonnerCountyFair.com. Don't miss the Challenge of Champions Bull Riding Friday evening at the Bonner County Fairgrounds.
As summer winds down, head up to Schweitzer for scenic chairlift rides, downhill mountain biking, hiking, and village activities. The resort is open daily, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., weather permitting until Monday, September 6th. For more info, visit Schweitzer.com.
Pondere Arts Council's 49th Annual Arts and Crafts Fair is this Saturday and Sunday on 2nd and Main in downtown Sandpoint, featuring over 100 vendors from fine art, artisan food, beauty products, jewelry, yard art, pottery, and much more.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer may be yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
So the dream was to build your very own law practice, be your own boss, call all the shots. But have things like billing, HR, timekeeping, and all the other management stuff turned your dream into a nightmare? Take charge of your practice with Lexicon. We're the intersection of practice management software and legal support services for your firm. You'll get more billable and livable hours back. Lexicon marks the spot for all your practice management needs. Visit lexiconservices.com/intersection to get the whole story or schedule a demo.
97.1 FM and 1450 AM, 1400 AM, North Idaho's radio.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. Happy Friday again. Again, sitting here today talking with Samantha Harvey, who has spent several years refining and perfecting a conversation that is just different out there for riders and horses to establish this relationship with horses. We were, if you're just joining our show, we were talking moments ago just about how the horses are, we get on the horse and we are, you know, we expect them to just go on the ride and to do all of these things. And, you know, we'll get into this also. There is some level of needing to go on a ride. But in the meantime, one of the things you mentioned that I'd like to just have a conversation about is, you know, I think for me or any of you just getting into horses, it's, we want the horse to love us, or if we, you know, if it comes and nuzzles us, we think that it likes us and it's cute in those kinds of behaviors. And in working with you, I understand that that's actually a nervous behavior perhaps. And maybe you can expand on that for anyone out there who experiences that.
Yes, there's very much a emotionally romanticized version of what we envision the horse experience is going to be. A lot of that has to do with Hollywood. But we have this idea of, you know, with this bond that we will have with this animal, which absolutely can be created. But we have to come from an empathetic place of understanding where the horse is coming from emotionally. And often when the human is thinking about the horse experience in this love or this closeness or this togetherness,
this connection
that we have, it's purely from the human perspective. And the irony
I'm sorry to break it to you, but I think it's true.
it really has very little acknowledgement of what the horse is actually experiencing. So one of the things that I see often, just as a quick example here of my horse loves me, is someone showing up and, you know, the horse comes over and of course they say, oh, look, he's happy to see me. And I say, do you have carrots? Do you have treats or so on? And so they say, yes. And so the horse comes over. It seems enthusiastic about it. Well, the day that I say we'll come in and don't have carrots and treats, and that horse goes, I'm out of here. And there's no acknowledgement to the human. There's no interest in participating with the human. And then I say, there's your honest answer. So sometimes we wind up doing things that make us feel good, meaning if we have a positive association with food reward, we're thinking, if I give this food reward to the horse, then therefore he's having the same experience as I would if I went out and got the ice cream or whatever it is. And they're not coming from that place. The other thing we need to realize is many horses have been through a lot of scenarios that maybe they've gotten through without too much damage or too much trauma or too much harm, but they're not particularly confident. They're not particularly trusting of humans. They're actually tolerant of humans. So they're not bad enough in their behavior, as people would classify it, or resistant enough in their behavior to where they're continually trying to get away. But if you watch, the closer that humans get with them, often the more what we call shut down or mentally checked out, physically very still.
Avoidant. I mean, it's avoidant, an avoidant.
So even if they're standing next to you, mentally, they're not there. They're not present. And then you have the person who says, I want to feel good, so I'm going to go give my horse a hug, or I'm going to be close to him, or I'm going to touch his face, all these sensitive body parts that, you know, sensory overdrive for the horse. And now the human is imposing themselves on the horse who's already already just tolerating them, who's already not particularly interested in participating. And then what the person doesn't realize is every time they're imposing themselves, they're creating their horse to become more shut down. And so at some point, this comes to a head and the horse says, I'm done, and either gently or maybe not so gently leaves. And then the human's left going, but I thought it was great. You were standing there and I used to do all these things to you and it was so wonderful and I loved you, not realizing that the whole time that they were so busy with the human story that they never actually considered what the horse was experiencing. Part of this comes from a lack of reading horse behavior, meaning how they communicate, just a basic misunderstanding or lack of understanding. And so people don't even realize the horse is giving continuous feedback because they're so stuck on their own version of what's happening. So
she says so much so quickly. And the beautiful thing is this is going to be recorded for you want to catch it again on her Instagram or on Let Your Color Out or North Idaho Radio. But it's just one of the things, you know, the horse does, it just starts to shut down and it starts to avoid by when we continuously impose ourselves on them. I think I always, when I work with Sam, I always relate it to the human also. And I think sometimes, you know, children will do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Many people will. And think of someone in a pressured situation. More people than not, when they're feeling a sense of pressure, and that could be mental pressure, it could be spatial pressure, meaning in a closed off area, lots of people, or whatever the pressure may be, whatever's causing a discomfort to them, more people than not will actually do nothing. So even though they're uncomfortable, they won't leave, they won't move away, they won't say anything.
It's kind of the fight, flight, freeze.
They'll just stand there and take it. And often that is the case with horses. On top of that, most of the time with horses, people are literally containing them. They have the halter on, they're holding the lead rope, the horse is tied, whatever the scenario. So there's two, you know, versions of how that horse is contained, you know. And the human just keeps imposing. And then they say, all of a sudden, he did X, Y, and Z. And it's like, well, he told you many times, but if you didn't understand or recognize his behavior in showing you there was boundaries you were crossing or his discomfort or distrust, you missed it. He had to get big and dramatic enough until you would believe him.
What there was a great story you told me at one point about a child who was having a tantrum. Again, I tend to liken this to because I'm so emotional. I mean, I'm so interested in the trying to get people to slow down and soften. And I feel like that's a little bit of your mission with horses. It's like, slow down, be present, celebrate, don't have an agenda, just let it unfold. But was that story you were telling about a child who was having a fit and you just literally offered a different
alternative scenario. Yeah. So someone
just what we do with horses.
Absolutely. So someone had a young child, probably about 2 years old, and the parent was, we were all waiting to go. And so this child needed to get in the car seat and it was a complete meltdown. I mean, on the floor,
we've
kicking and screaming. Everyone has been through it. We all are empathetic to it. The parent was trying to be reasonable. It wasn't overly like leaving it up to the child, feeling a pressure that we're all standing around waiting because we have to go. And so on, and went through the whole list of options with the child. No response, screaming, unreasonable, beyond, gone, so on. And I had been standing there waiting quietly. And so out of the blue, after this went on for quite a while, I just said, hey, do you want an ice cube? And the kid completely stopped screaming and popped up and looked up and said, yes. Yeah. And it wasn't about the ice cube. It had nothing to do with, I don't even know what the tantrum was about. But it was so out of left field that it redirected that child's focus on the complete fixation of this that was causing this meltdown. And when I came from out of left field and I gave the child something else to think about and change that thought, they could almost get out of their own way and become present again to where they could be reasonable. And that is a lot of what I wind up doing with these horses that are often deemed wild, crazy, bad, you know, he's just being stubborn. All these human terms, which are inappropriate for horses because horses don't think and make decisions like humans do. And yet they get, you know, categorized because that's how we've always done it. That's how we've always said things. And not realizing that a lot of times these horses have asked for help for years, but because we have missed it or ignored it or chose to bully them through their concern and their fear, you see these places of meltdown. And a lot of what I do in the rehabilitation of horses is really helping them learn how to stay mentally present even when they're concerned. And the biggest way that I start those conversations with the horse is being able to redirect their thoughts. So rather than allowing them to anticipate and fixate on everything that will happen based on their past experiences with humans, it's all about redirecting that thought. And as soon as they let go of the anticipation, they become available to hear what it is that I'm offering and physically soften and become reasonable.
It is. It's all about giving the horse an ice cube. I mean, it really is. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk about how you even start that conversation, because it's a slower process. It sometimes, in my case, feels somewhat mundane, but it really builds. It's like, you know, the same thing
foundation.
With the human behavior. It is. It's a whole new way. So you're listening to North Idaho Radio, and I am enjoying a great conversation today with Samantha Harvey.
At the co-op, we know it's pretty darn warm outside. We also know it isn't going to stay that way. So if you use energy logs or wood pellets, now is the time to give the co-op a call. The co-op is offering free delivery on energy logs and pellets through July and August. Free delivery is good for within 25 miles of the store. A $2 per mile charge applies thereafter. If you use propane in your home or office, now is also a great time to check into Co-op's propane products and services. If you aren't happy with your current propane provider, give Amy a call at 208-263-3338 and find out how easy it is to switch to Co-op propane. The inevitable chilly days of winter still lie ahead, so now is the time to let the Co-op help you get ready for them. Co-op Gas and Supply Company, 125 Tibbetts Lane in Ponderay, 208-263-6820.
North Idaho has some of the most beautiful forest in the nation. But with that beauty come some challenges. If you're new to North Idaho or have been here a while and own 10 or more acres of forest land, those challenges pose a threat to your forest. Idaho Forest Group can help prevent problems before they happen. Weather extremes have made forest land more susceptible to damage. High winds can topple trees weakened by wind, drought, or disease. By scheduling a free, no-obligation site visit by an Idaho Forest Group expert, we can help develop a forest management plan to help it stand up to Mother Nature's wrath. And if selective thinning is required, it could create extra income for your family. So whether you're new to the area or been here a while and own 10 or more acres of forest land, know that weather extremes aren't going away and can destroy your land's value. To book a free forest assessment by Idaho Forest Group, visit ifg.com.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer, maybe yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. Be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening and visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
Missed a noon hour? Check out the audio at our new website, northidahoradio.com.
Hello, hello. Welcome back. Okay, sitting in the studio today with Samantha Harvey, the alternative horse and remote horse trainer, coach. I don't think we like trainer. We like
coach.
Coach. Yeah. It's just a coach. Everybody needs a coach.
Yes. Whether it's coaches are good.
Coaches are healthy. They just kind of they're in your corner.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam is in the horse's corner.
Yes.
And we were just talking a bit about, you know, the horse. I said, gosh, was my horse? We had an ad come on that was ADHD, all of you could relate to. And of course, I scrolled right over and said, oh, that sounds interesting. But we were talking, I said, was my horse ADHD? And why don't you speak to how, you know, we can use a little of my scenario, because it is hard to stay so present with that horse when there's, you know, they're in chaos, but the the horse truly did mirror me when I didn't come focus and make sure that I had the follow through. It was amazing to see how the horse left also. He just avoided it, like we were talking, the avoidance.
Mm-hmm. So there's a certain amount of instinct in horses to where they need to be aware of their surroundings in order for survival, although a lot of domesticated horses have had a lot of that instinctive behavior taken out of them just in how we keep them, how we feed them, how we interact with them and all of that. But there's still a degree of that. But I find many times when people talk to me about their horse's inability to focus, it actually has become a learned behavior where the horse is so defensive about and anticipative about anything that might be asked of them, they start to expect or learn patterns in the human interaction. And so they start anticipating where they'll be caught or what time of day they'll be caught or where they'll be tacked up or where they'll be mounted or, you know, those sort of behavior patterns. And then the day the human does something different, you suddenly see, you know, your nice, sweet horse who always seemed to go along with things completely melt down. And you go, well, what happened? Nothing's different. There's nothing scary today. What's it, you know, what's the problem? Not realizing that so much of the time our interaction with our horse has taught him to basically tolerate a certain way and pattern of doing things. And then the day that we change that, that they are not, because they have not been thinking and mentally present and
they
focused,
just have a rote behavior.
They just have a rote behavior as many humans do, that they can't function. And so then you see them go into panic mode where they become like hyper reactive to everything happening within a 2 mile proximity, we'll say. You know, I mean, things at the neighbor's house they're suddenly concerned with, things, you know, back at the barn. And so things like herd bound behavior where horses get really stuck on needing the support from other horses in the herd, or things like my horse rides out really nicely when we leave home, but he's always rushing and dragging me home on the trail ride, or every time the gates open, my horse is dragging me over to the gate. There's all these different signs where the horse is seeming like, as we classify it as humans, he can't focus, the ADHD. And it's really, he's trying to find something where it can create some security and safety for him, because everything we've been presenting hasn't. And therefore, in his defensive mode, he becomes hyper-reactive, hyper-dramatic in his behaviors. The resistance goes up and the reasonableness tends to go away quite quickly. And then we become concerned. So
you can even see the avoidance in the eyes. I think absolutely. That's one of the things you've really cued me to watch for. It's just the eyes, and you can
– where are they literally looking? So many horses go through the motions without actually seeing where they currently are at. They're taking in everything else to be ready just in case, you know. And people don't realize that a lot of the time. And unfortunately, the answer for when the horse isn't listening is to add more equipment, right? More pressure.
Pressure.
More containment, rather than stepping back and going, what's the root cause here? And where is my focus, my ADHD, my lack of intention, my lack of clarity, my lack of specific communication? And then going, wow, no wonder my horse is bouncing all over the place. If I actually tell him what I want, how I want, and then I hear his feedback, if he's insecure, defensive about how I'm communicating it, we need to stop the conversation right there and address it rather than just adding more. But because of the human agenda, we tend to just add more and keep going and then act surprised when
guilty.
The horse is
resistant.
I mean,
I'm guilty of that, you know. But again, you've started that new way of walking for sure with me. Do you think that there's a I guess if people were out there and they're listening today and they were like, well, you know, I'm curious enough about this. Of course you can. And we will just stay with us till the end and we will get you in touch with Sam. However, she has lots of wonderful, wonderful resources out there on the internet and even this radio can replay it. But is there an easy way for someone to start in just if they're at home to, like, how would you get, if someone's out there and they've got a horse and they're like, huh, this is interesting enough that I might want to just try something on.
Well, there's a lot of different, you know, one of the things that I find is really, really difficult, the good bad news of having access to things like YouTube and internet and social media and all these different things is you can see all kinds of stuff going on with horses, and maybe you get good ideas, and maybe you're told about this step 1, 2, 3 program, or here's a real quick fix for whatever. And many times people go searching with good intentions. They want to improve the relationship with their horse. Unfortunately, what I find is most people think they are in a place that they are not actually in with their horse. So they're starting with this level of assumption that then when they're thinking, well, I see a video and I want to go try this or I want to go try something else, they don't realize how into trouble they can get how quickly with their horse. So I find, you know, maybe stop and just start to look for patterns. Just start there, because
literally observing them in the pasture. I mean, that's...
Yeah, you can observe in the pasture, but also look at the patterns between themselves and their horse. And this is much harder to do.
Yes.
Because when we make it all about the horse in the sense of like, he is doing this or he isn't doing that, we're judgmental, we're critical, which is our society in a nutshell. And when we bring that to the horses, it just shuts them down and causes them to not want to participate at all. So it's not about being touchy-feely, but it's being able to actually practice observing the horse without inserting the human emotional filter, which I know sounds funny because, again, as we started this whole show about loving the horse and wanting this relationship and this experience, but right. If you really do care about the horse, the best thing you can do is see him without a filter, meaning how often do you go out to the pasture if you have the opportunity at home or at the facility where you board or wherever it might be, or even just a herd of horses, even if they're not your horses, doesn't matter where you see it, and just start watching the behavior that goes on. And what people don't realize is horses within a herd are continuously communicating. They are continuously giving feedback to one another. It is very specific. It is very clear. And if we start to observe what happens from that communication, we'll realize the horse is constantly thinking and making decisions. And then somehow when we add the human and the horse factor together, we wind up seeing this horse almost completely go away so much of the time or do things to avoid the experience because we are not there believing, receiving, and addressing the horse's feedback. So one of the biggest things you can look for is your own patterns of, I always go out the same time of day. I always catch my horse in the same way. I always tie. And if you change that pattern, what is your horse's response? And that's going to give you feedback as to where his brain and emotions are when you're doing just the most seemingly basic interactions. And if he's already avoidant or defensive, then anything else you ask of him is just adding more pressure and opening up the door for unwanted scenarios for
it's
you
just
and him.
Stacking it up. Yeah.
Which people do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've certainly noticed that. It also, it's not just being clear and specific for the horse. It's difficult for the human.
Very difficult for the human.
Please speak to that. Because that, you know, she's like, mix up, do something different. And it's not just about catching him at a different time, but it's really difficult to mix up my thinking so often.
So the really steep learning curve that nobody wants to talk about, especially in the horse world, because you have this 1,000-pound emotional prey animal who's looking for guidance. I mean, they are a herd animal. So they are very receptive. If we are clear, fair, and specific in how we communicate. But much of the time, the human-horse interaction is the human waiting to see what the horse does, and then they react after the fact. And then they say, no, don't do that, or that was bad, or they become critical, or they become aggressive or whatnot in how they're communicating. And so that's like, you know, watching the stoplight turn red, seeing the car coming from the other direction that he's going to run it, and you just step on the gas pedal and you get in an accident. You go, why did that happen? Well, you saw it coming. You did nothing about it. You continued, and then you act shocked that the accident happened. It's the same thing with horses all the time.
Stop. You have to speak to that because that is true. And I see it time and time again. I've experienced, but when we're in a situation, you give gas.
Yes. Everybody.
I'd love you to speak to that.
More, yeah. So like, let's say that open gate you're riding past and the horse is drifting towards it. What do? We add more gas. Well, if the horse, let's stop for a second because most people think if you move the horse's feet, you're going to control it. To me, it's a 1,000-pound animal. I'm 5'2". I'm not going to make that horse go anywhere. Okay. So it's about directing the horse's thought, and his body follows wherever his mind is focused on. So the reason why the horse is drifting out the gate is because he's thinking out the gate because home or feet or dinner or whatever is going on. So his body's going to try and move out the gate. So if his thought is out the gate and his body's drifting and we add gas or leg or seat energy as we're sitting in the saddle, where does he go? Faster out the gate. And then we go, why did you do that? Right? So much of the time when we're unsure, we either A, do nothing as we talked about earlier, or B, we add a whole lot of energy. We don't add specifics. We don't redirect that horse's thought. We just think if I just hurry up and get past this uncomfortable place, it will magically get better over there. That's the hopeful segment, right?
Yes, you're right. It is true. And you, one of the things I noticed often is you try to sneak by And I think so often we even do that in relationship and in parenting. You just kind of sneak by an awkward moment rather than just break up each moment.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest things that people can do to help themselves and their horse in order to stay focused or to start to maybe experiment and start to maybe be from a third person perspective, look at themselves with their horse is notice how often do you pause when you're with your horse? In our society, it's all about multitasking, how much you can do, how fast you can go, how much you accomplish, all the time, constantly. And then we get with the horse who is not coming from that place of how he operates, thinks, or behaves. And if we start to experiment with literally just stopping, if from wherever your pasture is to the hitching rack or the tie post, whatever, stop five times. Even if that seems like an inane amount of times, experiment with it. Notice how uncomfortable you get, not just that your horse gets uncomfortable. And notice that in that halt or in that pause, how quickly does your brain leave? How quickly does your brain go all over the place? And then notice where the horse's brain goes too. It's not about making them stop. It's about noticing how often we aren't even present and we've gone through the motions for the first 15, 20 minutes with the horse of the boring stuff. And suddenly we're going to focus. That whole time we haven't been focused, we've taught our horse to mentally check out.
Right. Right. And we're already on the ride. And I think for me, it's been difficult the follow through, you know, it's like, okay, we stop, we're good. And we're on to the next thing. I mean, okay, we're a little closer to that ride. We're a little closer to that ride. And I think that, you know, in working with Sam, and I know you spend a lot of time on the ground because you say, if you have steering on the ground, then you'll have steering when you're on them. And I think that that's a real powerful takeaway for sure for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the old days, I'll say, of doing groundwork, working your horse from the ground, you know, it was basically bare minimum. So whatever it barely took to catch the horse, get him tacked up and then get on and then you would fix it. Rather than thinking of everything from the very first interaction from when your horse is still loose is setting the tone for the ride. So if your horse is already running away from you when you pull out the halter, then what do you think the quality of the ride will be like? If your horse is already fussing and fidgeting when he's standing tied and he's moving back and forth and looking everywhere and chewing and biting on the rail, that state of agitation, what do you think is going to happen in the ride? If you go to get on and your horse is already walking off, whether or not you're ready or your backside's even touched the saddle, how available is that horse for you to actually influence how he handles when the moose jumps out, when the bear jumps out? There isn't, but we just get through those moments because we can survive them. We can sneak them. If we sit really quiet, we can sort of get into the saddle, get our foot in the stirrups, and then we'll fix it when the horse is bouncing up and down or dragging us sideways or bolting. And it's like, why would you wait until peak stress of a flight animal before you go, I think we're having a problem?
Addressing the concerns. Yeah, it is. Really addressing the concerns along the way. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to Sam about getting in touch with her. And maybe even if someone out there wants to follow her or work with her. She's an incredible horse coach that travels up and down. You've been listening to Let Your Color Out Radio. And we'll be right back. Thank you, Sam.
Taylor and Sons Chevrolet.
Hi, this is Brett Taylor with Taylor and Sons Chevrolet. Our family's been operating the Chevrolet dealership serving the Sandpoint area for over 30 years. Chevrolet has been represented in the Sandpoint area for nearly 100 years, and throughout the majority of that time, two local families have operated the dealership. What this adds up to is experience. Taylor and Sons boasts the largest, most modern service department in the area, staffed with experienced technicians and advisors with hundreds of years of combined experience in the group. Taylor & Sons sales department is led and staffed by a group of longtime Sandpoint locals with our community's best interest at heart. With nearly 300 verified reviews, Taylor & Sons carries a 4.8 out of 5-star rating on Google. What this means is that Taylor & Sons is the premier location in North Idaho to consider replacing your current vehicle or maintaining and repairing the one you currently have. You can view all of our current inventory and service specials online at tschevy.com. For guest-focused service, a world-class facility, and value for your money, it's Taylor & Sons Chevrolet.
When I injured my back on the job, I expected to lose a little time. But when I became addicted to painkillers, I almost lost everything. I was too proud to ask for help, but my wife convinced me to get treatment, and I'm recovering now.
Ask your doctor about opioid use disorder and treatment options. Call 211 or visit StopOverdoseIdaho.org to learn more. This content is the sole responsibility of the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare and does not necessarily represent the official views of the CDC.
Did you know that breast cancer deaths have declined by more than 37% since the introduction of annual screening mammography in the 90s? The data doesn't lie. Early detection saves lives. If you're 40 or older, call Inland Imaging at 509-455-4455 or go to inlandimaging.com/schedule to schedule your annual mammogram. Ask us about evening and weekend appointments. Inland Imaging, for answers you can trust and care you can count on.
Sweet Lou's is the place for summertime dining. Enjoy the patio seating at the Coeur d'Alene location and try the new menu items. There's the refreshing seared ahi salad, spicy shrimp tacos, and the bison burger with Havarti cheese. All so good. And Sweet Lou's is also a great place to work with great pay and health benefits available. Apply online today at sweetlouisidaho.com. On Front Avenue in Coeur d'Alene and Highway 95 in Ponderay. Come hungry, stay late, eat well. Sweet Lou's.
I was part of trading company for 10 years, and I've been with Yokes now as an employee owner, and it's absolutely been a great experience.
Yokes Fresh Market is a family business that takes care of its family.
Ponderay Arts Council's 49th Annual Arts and Crafts Fair is this Saturday and Sunday on 2nd and Main in downtown Sandpoint, featuring over 100 vendors from fine art, artisan food, beauty products, jewelry, yard art, pottery, and much more.
KSPT, KBFI, North Idaho's radio.
Hello, welcome back. We're in our final segment with Samantha Harvey, the remote horse coach, and you're listening to Let Your Color Out Life and Radio, where we talk about people pursuing passion, purpose, and maybe just introducing new concepts that might be a little more gentle, a little more approach from empathy and compassion. We all need a little more of that in this crazy, divisive world that we're in. So in this last bit, I would love to just have Samantha talk a little bit more about we were actually going to just finish up on, go ahead. I forgot. That was my ADHD for you.
We were talking a little bit about goals. So sometimes
goals.
People.
Thank you. I need them. Thank you, Sam. We had so many things.
So sometimes what people come forth with is, you know, I want to have a horse. I want to enjoy this experience, but like, I'm not sure what I'm working towards, or maybe the things that used to be important to me if I rode as a kid and then went and had life and now I've revisited, you know, horses later in life and I don't quite balance the same and don't have quite the same agenda. What should I do? What should I do with my horse? And, you know, I'll explain to people that if we are going to approach this relationship and partnership with our horse from a place of empathy, where we are learning to work with the horse, there are so many things that we can do in an experience with the horse that really brings us joy that we've never even considered. So, you know, from the basics of realizing, even in working with horses loose, where there's no containment, there's no making them, there's no driving, there's no forcing. The basic things of, you know, one of the biggest jokes and memes on social media right now is talking about just, you know, the joy people have of when they call their horse, that the horse actually comes, you know, over in the pasture and chooses to be with them. And
you expect no different.
And, right? And to me, that's just normal. Yeah. But what people don't realize is, like, for so long, because things have been masked, because things have been, you know, I love my horse and this is what we do. And so we make it work, or we sneak through things, or we avoid uncomfortable moments. We don't really ever say, was there quality? And I think if we step back we start to address from this place of empathy and go, let's start from the very beginning. If everything I go to do with my horse, my only goal is that there's quality, whether it's from how the horse is interacting in the pasture when he's loose, whether it's from when we're, you know, getting on and riding by ourselves or with another group of people, even in just a small area, you don't have to go out and go far or whatnot. It's not to say you can't do things with your horse, but I find if we remove pressures of, I should be doing this with my horse, or I have to do X, Y, and Z in order to feel a sense of accomplishment or a sense of why I own a horse. And we start to become present to what that horse is communicating, to what he's mentally and emotionally experiencing in that moment as we're presenting scenarios. We start to learn to consider the horse and work with the horse. And that changes the whole experience. So whether you never leave the yard, whether you're riding up high in the mountains, whether you're enjoying jumping fences, doesn't matter what the actual event that follows or events that follow. It's what are all the segmented pieces and experiences that you you've learned to share with that horse to where you're available to hear, you're available to learn, you're available to experiment.
To listen to his insecurity.
Yes, and mm-hmm. to help him. And when you see that you have helped that horse work through the fear, the concern, the defensiveness, or whatever he may be having going on, and he's in that better spot, and the day you feel that horse check in and turn to you and really become available to whatever it is that you ask of him, that to me, for so many people, that sense of accomplishment is more than any ribbon, than any medal, than any
ride,
backcountry ride, than any sort of thing like that. But it takes a level of commitment. It takes a level of, I'm going to say, selflessness
and
in the sense of it's not just about you. We want to throw out the words equine partnership, but there's two of you involved. And so if we're really going for a quality experience to enjoy this journey, and it is a journey and it is an ongoing journey, and there's always opportunity to refine and keep building, then let's look at quality. And if we start there, that changes everything in how we view an experience. And it removes the pressures of have to's or should be's or, you know, well, my friend's doing this and I'm not doing that with the horse.
I think that right there is so powerful as we wind down the show, truly, is to just not go out with that. I mean, it's kind of a little ironic. You're like, have some goals, but not like the goal of getting on a ride and brushing your horse. And I mean, it might literally be just haltering him and then just playing in the pasture, mm-hmm. making an obstacle course. I mean, out of sticks and branches and tree trunks.
Yeah. And the big thing is it has to be relative to where you and your horse are at. And that's, you know, where people have an expectation because of a horse's training or his age or whatever it is. And often we don't really stay present to say, what does this horse need from me in this moment? If that was our real goal, then we would be finding that quality. We'd be building that equine partnership. And then we would be feeling a level of success without having to have it acknowledged by others.
Yeah. But at sometimes this is the challenge. I mean, there are things you have to do. You need to load that horse in
Absolutely.
The trailer.
So the whole point, if we're looking for building quality, if that's our priority, then our horse starts to learn to become reasonable when he's showing his concern, his fear or resistance, such as trailer loading, which is like the number two problem in the entire horse world of getting a horse in a big metal box. But if we've really focused on how we communicate and if we're communicating with quality, we've built the tools in order to be able to redirect that horse's thought and being able to help him dissipate tension and physical brace and physical resistance in his body. We've built his willingness to try, even if he's unsure. And then we present something like a horse trailer, we can work through in segments in helping that horse become confident in being able to load. This last horse that you got, same thing. When I met the horse, he's rearing and dragging sideways and ready to take off with the human and drag out of the trailer. I had just met him. And when he came back home, I pointed to the trailer and he walked right in and stood quietly. So it's not about practicing at the horse trailer. It's practicing the conversations and the quality of how you communicate so that you're building that rapport. So then the things that once were overwhelming are no longer a big deal.
It's a building block and it really does change. I mean,
Absolutely.
There's this gentle transformation that you just watch occur. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to articulate and explain, although you do a great job articulating it, but it does happen.
Yeah.
For the horse starts to feel a little more of a real connection. And I think you can directly translate to humans.
Completely.
And the body. And, yeah. You know, I've lived with the MS in the body for so long, and that is where the disease has healed itself. That is where, you know, the body will astound you.
Mm-hmm.
And the relationships are rich.
Yep.
And the authenticity is there. And the judgment and critique is just not even part of our conversation
it's
anymore.
It's unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you remove that, you have so much freedom. And that freedom allows you to experiment, allows you to have fun, it allows you to laugh, it allows you
to
so
let your color
things.
Out, sister. It allows you just to be. I always like to say, what's one way you let your color out? I mean,
absolutely.
It's just, this is a way. It's a new conversation with a horse.
Yep, absolutely.
Tell everyone out there who is listening the best way to follow you, learn about you, and perhaps one day be with you up in Sandpoint, Idaho.
Okay, so I am in Sandpoint, Idaho at the Equestrian Center, basically from April through about October, and then I head south to warmer weather, and I actually travel all over the world teaching clinics and doing a variety of things. But to work in person, you can find me at learnhorses.com. If you are unable to participate in person or I'm away during the winter time and you'd like to do some remote coaching, which is where we do coaching through videos and through telephone and all kinds of different options, sessions that we have. There's a whole variety, individual group. There's horse webinars. There's all kinds of stuff. It's remotehorsecoach.com. I have a video catalog of over 165 teaching videos. I'm on Facebook, Alternative Horsemanship. I'm on Instagram, Alternative_horsemanship. I have
the
YouTube,
best way we're winding down here.
Alternative Horsemanship.
But the best way would just, it's just your website.
Yeah.
Learnhorses.com.
Everything is linked there.
Learnhorses.com. Again, Samantha, thank you so much for coming in and sharing. And we're winding down our last bit. And truly, there's so much to be learned and gleaned here about yourself. So if you go in and watch, you've heard her articulation, her conversation. This is remarkable work for you to, as you start to even explore your relationship with the horse or your expectations and where you're judgmental. And it's a beautiful way. So thank you very much for listening to Let Your Color Out Radio. And my name is Lindy Lewis. Have a beautiful Friday.
KG46U, 1450 KPFI, Bonners Ferry, 1400 KSPT Sandpoint, and online at NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Anything in terms of fire.